You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Hey, welcome everybody. Here District, it's the Fantastic Voyage. I am the captain of this vessel, first mate Chris Johnson. Chris and I are the only father and son tandem in basketball history, Milt Newton, to win a national championship at the same school. There's been other guys that have done it at different schools, the Bibbies, the Mays, Scott and Sean, and, you know, I think maybe the Berries may have, well, I don't think Rick Berry won a championship.
Luke and Bill, that's
who I'm thinking about. Luke Walter and Bill Walter, but at the same school, it's myself and Chris. So we are here, man, and we are so excited to have a renaissance man, a true renaissance man, not only a basketball savant in terms of putting together personnel and piecing together teams and creating great culture, but also an artiste, Christon, an artiste, just a terrific photographer. We'll get more into that as we go along. Milt Newton joins the Here District. Milt, thank you for being here, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks for having me. Marcus and Chris. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it. So now, you know, I appreciate you. Now, I always love to kind of dig into a little backstory on our guest in the basketball world. And I have this thing, 6 degrees of basketball separation, that I always find that there's some commonality, guys that we played against or guys that we knew or coaches that you might have had. But you came over from the United States, from the Virgin Islands at 13 years old.
Yes.
Heavy accent, thick accent tease when you were first here? Or what was it like?
Yeah. No, I definitely had that when I first came over. And you probably can get it out of me if you rile me up a good much. It'll probably swing back to that, but definitely had a thick accent.
Give me a little bit of it. Come on, boy. Give me something, boy. Hey, boy. I coached in Belize. I spent a lot of time in Belize, so I got a whole Belizean thing going on. I don't know if that's similar to the Virgin Islands, man.
I can't do that right now.
Okay, no, right now, man. Come on, man. You disappoint me, boy. Hey, boy, you disappoint me now. No, it's all good. And so you come here, you move right to D.C., or what do you guys sell?
No, actually, I moved to Teaneck, New Jersey for a year.
Okay.
Finished up the ninth grade, and then moved to Washington, D.C.
Coolidge High School. What luminaries have gone to Coolidge High School? Fill us in on
Kermit Washington.
Wow.
One of my best friends in basketball.
American University. Hey. 20 points, 20 rebounds a game,
that's
man.
My guy. Hey, a gentleman.
Now, who else? Anybody else?
Daryl Webster, David Butler.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we had some players that came through there.
Okay. So what I like to do, Milt, also is just kind of get it from you in terms of, you know, growing up in D.C. high school-wise, after you get here at 13, spend a little time in Teaneck, New Jersey. But, I mean, you cut your basketball teeth in D.C. Give me that D.C. vibe. What's the D.C. basketball vibe like? What's the characteristics of a D.C. player, if you can just in broad strokes paint it for us?
Definitely about self-expression, artistry of the game, ball handling. We're actually the city that brought the DC crossover into the limelight. Allen Iverson took it to the NBA and made it a worldwide type of move. But DC is where that originated. Street ball legend by the name of Greg Jones is the one that pretty much kind of invented that move. And that's what we're known for. I mean, we can play bully ball, but you know, the crossover and making your defender look stupid is a DC basketball.
But Milt, are you saying that Greg Jones was doing it before Allen Iverson? Or did Allen come to Georgetown with it, or did he learn it once he got there?
No, he got that from Greg Jones. Greg
did
Jones,
really?
Yes. Okay. Greg Jones taught him that move, and Allen perfected it.
All right, I never knew that.
When Greg Jones played it, I think he played at like West Virginia, but he was a street ball legend, and he had many tricks.
So he had the whole, like, let it linger a little bit. And then,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Let it linger and give it to him.
Take you out and bring you back.
Yo, Milt, the DC Cross thing, it doesn't get enough love because a guy I grew up with, Mike Powell, I don't know if you remember that name. Mm-hmm. He's like from the Baltimore area, and another guy named Michael Lloyd, two guys that came out to the West Coast, and they were holding it so high. You know what I'm saying, Milt? Yeah. Like, when you brought that, when the DC Cross, it was a serious hook. Wow. It was a serious hook to that thing, man. And that was the first time I kind of saw it back in, like, 93 was when I saw it first. And then Iverson made it real popular in the league.
So lethal, the NBA outlawed it.
Facts. See, so you heard it right here. Here, District, the Fantastic Voice. You learn something new every day. I did not know Greg Jones was the guy that kind of popularized it, and Allen Iverson took it to another level and took it to the NBA. So that's good to hear. Now, Milt, we talked about this during the season, I believe, but there was a lot of Facebook controversy that erupted when Michael Graham, the Joe Hardy of college basketball, just kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, I never just and this is just my perspective from watching back in the mid 80s, whenever it was with Georgetown. But this big dude, lefty, ball headed, menacing, came out of nowhere and just helped Georgetown win a national championship. I think it's Seattle that year with Patrick Ewing and that crew. Yeah. But Michael Graham on Facebook, Milt, claimed that he had never been dunked on in his life. Chris, he said, I've never been dunked on by nobody ever. Now there was a rush. There was a spate of comments that followed from DC ball players that said, man, Milt Newton got you at Sitwell Friends in the Summer League. Describe that for us, Milt.
Hey, look, I mean, I get it. Yeah. If Mike, you know, if he don't want to accept the fact that he got back in the day, because he was like the tough guy in that era, you know. And, you know, people, it's really interesting. People outside of the D.C. Area didn't know about him. But when he got to Georgetown and got more visibility, he was like that in high school and in junior high school. But everybody that grew up in D.C. that can hoop, it doesn't matter how big and tough you are. Like, you're going to meet at the summit. And I've been known to get many of guys, and he just happened to be one of them.
Yeah, hey. No. Yeah. So I would assume athleticism was one of your traits then that you kind of brought to the table. I mean, you had some hops then, serious hops.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, that was one of the things that I highlighted in my game. I wasn't a very good shooter in high school. I became a better shooter when I went to college, but just my athleticism, jumping ability, and growing up in that area, like, if you're not a dog, you're going to get your food taken from you. So we all had that mentality. And it didn't matter if you were 6'9 or 6'1, we're going to go at it. And, you know, sometimes you're going to get got,
right,
like he did. And sometimes you got.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I could jump pretty high, but there were guys that jumped higher than I did.
Yeah. See, and you say that. I remember the first time, Chris, I got as an NBA player. I'm coming down the court in transition. There's a guy on the right wing by the name of Sonny Parker. You might have heard of his son, Jabari Parker. Sonny out of Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, light-skinned brother, whatever. You know, I never really heard of him. You know, second-round pick, whatever. Went to, like, Texas A&M or something, you know. So back in those days, it's just like, okay, I'm getting ready to pin this. And so I was timing my steps. He went up, Milt. He threw down on me so hard, I landed on my backside, and he kind of looked at me and just gave me a little bit of a wink. But you know, I mean, as you talk about athleticism, man, I shared that with Jabari when he was with the Bucks a few years back, and he got a big kick out of that one, man. But so, Milt, you go on from there, high school, to Kansas.
Yeah.
And man, I mean, well, I was trying to remember the nickname. Chris, what was the Danny and the Miracles? Was that
Danny
what it was?
And the Miracles.
Danny and the Miracles. Man, just talk about that experience. Kansas and Larry Brown and then Roy. Just what was that like for you?
I mean, it was an incredible experience for me because, I mean, I can say, just like you can say you and Chris, the only father-son tandem to do this, what you're doing now, I can say I'm one of the few guys that have been coached by three Hall of Famers.
Word.
John Calipari is the one that saw me at Five Star.
Okay.
was on Larry Brown's staff at the time that recruited me to Kansas.
Wow.
So having played for him and being coached by him, and then Coach Brown, obviously, and when Coach Brown left, Roy Williams. So having being coached by three Hall of Famers and seeing how those top minds coach the game, how they show a vision and go about attaining that, you know, that goal. Yeah. I consider myself really, really blessed. But my time at Kansas, playing with guys like Danny Manning, guys that I talk to this day, Scooter Berry,
yeah,
Kevin Pritchard, you know, underrated defender, a guy named Chris Piper. Like, we had fun. I mean, we all have fun when you're on the college scene. But having been with those guys and eventually winning a championship, you know, just a great feeling, because not too many of us get to win a championship on any level, no matter how long we've played the game.
Facts.
And when you play the game that long and you do win a championship, you know there's certain ingredients that go into winning that championship. You know, people talk about Danny and the Miracles. Guess what? Being one of the Miracles was a role you had to accept.
And it was crucial. That's crucial. If you don't have the Miracles, you don't win the championship. You
exactly.
know, you don't accept that role. The chemistry is all askew. You don't win that championship. Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, that's what it's about, winning a championship. We play this game to win.
Yeah.
And but it was great. It was a great time.
So now I'm sitting there, man, and just, I mean, things pop into my head just organically. And one of the things that I can remember is just having such a basketball crush on Danny Manning. How good he was. I mean, just to be, what was that? Danny's what, 6'10", 6'11"?
11.
Yeah.
6'11". But I mean, he was so smooth with the handles and the little mid-range kind of push shot. And but I mean, what was that like, man, playing with Danny? And I mean, did his talent just ooze out of him every day when you're going against him in practice like that?
Yes. I mean, Danny was the first guy that I saw in a live game throw the ball off of somebody's head from out of bounds, step in, get it, and make the shot. But Danny, the biggest thing about Danny was Danny could really pass the basketball.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I tell people, and you can look it up, when I tell people I am the number one on the list in Kansas history and for 3-point percentage.
Wow.
Shooting over 100 threes, that's because of Danny. So Coach Brown used to set me up on the left wing outside the three-point line. And if I threw it down to Danny, they double-team him. He would kick it back out. Not too many guys are willing to kick the ball back out. But just like we knew our role, he knew his role. His role was to make us better. Just very unselfish, can handle the ball. Wasn't a big time athlete, but didn't have to be.
Right.
But he just had his IQ was so high. But when you talk about that team, I always say we had the best player and we had the best coach.
Larry Brown.
Larry LB. Brown.
Kansas Jayhawks have beaten all odds. They have lost more games than any champion in the history of the NCAA. And Bedlam reigns here in Kansas City as the Jayhawks beat the Sooners 83-79.
So now here's a little 6 degree of basketball separation. So my junior year at UCLA, I went down to Denver and watched Larry's Nuggets play Dr. J and the New Jersey Nets at that time, or New York Nets, whatever they were. I think New York Nets at that time. Mm-hmm. But a great, great ABA finals. And so Larry, and I was really close, Milt. I was close. Carl Shearer had actually sent the contract out, and I was about to sign it. And then a lot of stuff happened that could have impacted the merger, so they had to back out of the deal at the very last minute. But man, I so wanted. Larry was so cool. Back in those days, man, he had on the patchwork jean overalls and the flowered hippie shirt on the sideline. But he told me something, Milt, that I'll never forget. He said the two most important summers of your career will be the summer before your rookie year. Work hard, come in in shape, do your thing, and then the summer after your rookie year. Find out what you need to improve upon, and then work on that to get to be a better basketball player. So all these years later, it's 1976. That still resonates with me. But man, Larry Brown, that, he must have been special to play for.
Yeah, I mean, he was like, to this day, I talk to Coach because Coach is a basketball lifer, and Coach is still, he's still trying to coach. And if you call Coach from an NAIA, a high school, and say, Coach, I want you to come in and do a camp for me or talk to my guys, guess what? He's on the next plane to do that. He loves the game. He loves teaching most of all.
Yeah.
And here is a guy that he tells you to set a screen at 45 degrees. And if you set it at 50 degree angle, he'll stop practice wow. and tell you why that 5 degrees is the most important. So he'll show you how to play basketball the right way. And I mean, I was really blessed to be around a coach like that, a person like that, a mentor like that, that actually taught me how to play the game the right way, how to look at players and evaluate players to see what it takes to put a team together to win the ultimate prize.
I had a question for you because we kind of get into it out here being UCLA guys. You know, when we talk to Carolina guys, the Duke guys, we kind of have this thing, right?
Yeah.
It's the blue blood thing.
Yeah.
So Kansas, for me, I always make the point that Kansas might be the most official blue blood because of Dr. James Naismith, Dean Smith, Adolph Rupp. That connection right there yeah. to Kansas basketball, not to mention y'all and everybody else.
Wilt Chamberlain, that
is one of the most mind-blowing basketball connections I've ever heard of. Now, with being inside the program, being a Kansas guy, is Kansas truly like that special of a blue blood basketball program that we think it is on the outside looking in?
Yes, it is for a variety of reasons. But I think Carolina more so because the rules of basketball are at KU right now in the museum. The rules of the game. The players that came through, the Danny Mannings, the JoJo Whites, the Paul Pierce, you know, just like just the amount of guys that came through there that went on to do big things in the game. But the family, the camaraderie in terms of like when you walk down the street and you see another guy from KU and you say Rock Chalk, they know what you mean. You know, they know what you mean. Between Carolina, Duke, and Kansas, it depends on the season you had. You might be number one all time in victories.
Word.
Over Duke and Carolina. And then a year later, it might be Duke, Kansas, Carolina, you know? So like yeah. in terms of all time victories, like we're in the top three all the time.
Right. 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 And Rock Chalk. What does that mean?
The chalk that is indicative of that area. Like, you know, okay. some like Milwaukee has, you know, the Cream City.
Sure.
You know, Rock Chalk is that. And they actually made it into like an anthem. But the rock chalk, the foundation of that is based on the ground in okay. that, you know, Lawrence, Kansas area.
Right, got it. Now, you talked about the great coaches, Steph, Coach Cal and Roy Williams and all these coaches. There's another coach on that staff by the name of Alvin Gentry. Could you share a hazing story that if you don't mind, with our fans out there, please?
Alvin's going to get out. He's going to get at me.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. That your limitations is over with.
But I tell you what, I mean, like, so back then, like, we're playing for Larry Brown, and Coach – when you, the head coach, he's the guy that gets on you. The assistant coaches are the ones that's supposed to kind of lift you up. Like
right.
when coach beats you right. down, they come by and they lift you up. So we're playing at the Garden one time and we're playing Duke. And I think it was like in the pre-NIT or something like that. And we go into halftime and we're winning the game at that point. So Alvin comes in and he goes, guys, you guys are playing great. Just keep doing what you're doing. And then Coach Brown comes in and, you know, Coach is never really satisfied with, you could always play better. And Coach Brown is going off and he's saying, you guys are playing like crap. Danny, you're not doing this. Milt, you're not doing that. And then he says, hey, Alvin, am I wrong? And he goes, no, coach, you're right. You're right. Right?
A flip-flop. Okay.
Sold y'all out.
He flipped the script on us. So he did that for the entire year. Like, he would say something, and then he would go back when Coach Brown had a different view. So the last game of the season, and we actually started a tradition on this. I don't think they do it anymore. We decided that we were going to grab a coach the last road game. We were going to grab a coach and do something to him. So we thought about grabbing a coach, getting some of the trainer's tape, taping the coach up, put them in the elevator, and press lobby. So we said we couldn't do Larry Brown because he was the head coach. Yeah. We couldn't do Ed Manning because Coach Manning could beat the crap out of all of us.
Right.
And we couldn't do R.C. Buford because R.C., his family had all the money. So we said, let's get Alvin. So we called Coach Manning. We were at Iowa State in Ames, and we told Coach Manning to tell Coach Gentry that we needed to talk to him. Could he come up to our room? So he came up to the room where the entire team was waiting. He came in the room. We grabbed him, took off all his clothes except for his underwear. Wrapped him up in trainer's tape from head to toe.
The mummy. Wow. Okay, I love
Put
it.
Put him
love
in
it.
The elevator and press lobby.
Oh, wow.
He goes down to the lobby, and it's 5 o'clock. The lobby is filled with a gang of people. Coach Brown looks at the lobby, sees Alvin, and just shook his head and went on about his business.
Oh, boy.
If you see Alvin Gentry to this day, you ask him about that, he's gonna say, "Yeah, they got me.
Oh, they got me." Yeah. That baby. I mean, you know, because you normally hear about that kind of stuff with player to player, get a freshman or something, but to actually grab a coach that had been kind of flip flopping y'all season long and do that to him.
Oh yeah,
that's a classic. I appreciate you sharing that with us, man.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
Let's keep it going, man. So now you. Win the national championship, 1988, blah 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 blah. We fast forward to your career as an executive, and how you got to be an executive, and not only that, but just who shaped your philosophy, if anybody did. Maybe you did it on your own, but how was that shaped? And then what is it in terms of team building and personnel acquisition? What's the Milton Newton blueprint?
Well, the first thing I gotta share with you is so. I'm done playing basketball professionally, whatever. And I go back to Kansas and I get my master's degree. And
in what?
In sports administration.
Okay.
So I've got a lot of my classmates, they're saying they want to run like their own gym. They want to work at a clinic. They want to do, they want to be an athletic director at a university, college, or what have you. And I said, I want to be an NBA general manager. So I'm like, how can I get into the NBA? True story. I call Coach Brown on a Wednesday. I said, Coach, I'm trying to work in the NBA. Like, can you help me, you know, get to that goal? This is on a Wednesday. He says, Milt, call me back tomorrow, Thursday. Call them back on a Thursday, the day after. He said, I've got you an interview with the Nuggets. I got you an interview with the Indiana Pacers. He got me an interview, i.e., I got you a job. Mm-hmm. So I went to the Pacers, interviewed there. They offered me the job. I went to the Nuggets, interviewed. They offered me the job. And since I had played in the Midwest for such a long time, I figured I wanted to go see a different part of the country. So I went out to the Southwest in Colorado, got my first NBA job, 1993.
Okay.
That's when we had Dikembe, Mahmoud Raouf, Reggie Williams, Brian Stith, LaPhonso Ellis. beat Seattle in the first round of the playoffs with
the one eight seed.
So I was with the staff. Bernie Bickerstaff was the general manager. Dan Issel was the head coach. So that was my first foray into the NBA. But being around Larry Brown and Roy Williams, John Calipari, and Wayne Embry later on in my career, the one thing that they impressed upon me is, like, we all know you got to have talent to win in this game, but you got to have players that are willing to sacrifice. You've got to have players that are willing to have a goal that's bigger than their individual goals. Because if you don't have that, you're not going to win. Wayne Embry shared something with me that I actually lived and experienced this. He says, Milt, you can have talent, but talent without character is no talent. And I said, okay, explain that to me. He said, you can have a talented player, but if that player doesn't have character, he's going to do something at some point along the line that will not allow him to provide that talent to you. I'm not going to call any names, but I experienced that at a very high level. And so just seeing their vision, Coach Brown having the year we won the championship, we had a JUCO All-American that we got as a junior. We threw four players off that team. Hmm. The team that we won the championship with was not the team we started with.
Wow.
So I remember one day we had a point guard, was one of the best in the country, comes to Kansas, and he was the type of point guard where he would come down, he'd throw you a pass, and if you fumble it, like, he would get on you, like, pitch the ball, man, you're making me look bad. So he did that one too many times. And during practice, Coach Brown says, blew the whistle, and he says, player A, go to the locker room, clean out your locker, and don't come back. He got kicked off the team right there on the spot.
Wow.
That's cold.
We had other players that did not buy in to us being the best that we can be. That one by one, coaches got rid of them. We picked up two guys on the football team that was on the championship team. But I say all that to say, like, you can have, if everyone's not going in the same direction, you just have a bunch of individuals, you won't win no matter how talented you are. I was taught that, first of all, you have to give of yourself for the betterment of the team, and everyone have to be striving, going in the same direction to achieve that goal that you wanted to achieve. And all three coaches had that as a foundation of how they coach and how they went about trying to put a vision in place to be successful.
And so tangibly, so if you're talking about acquisition, and so we got three new guys, DeLon Wright, Taurean Prince, and Gary Trent Jr. What's that process like? How do you know that these guys will be good fits? How much background do you do on them, or is it just an observational thing, watching them, how they relate with their teammates? What's the approach of bringing in new players into a team that has a lot of strong personalities in their core four in particular?
Well, Marcus, it's all that, but we like our scouting department. They scout year round. Early in the season, they scout NBA personnel. And just like when you go and watch a kid in high school and how they react on the bench, how they react when they get taken out the game, how they react in their communication with the coach, we do the same thing with NBA players. And so when we go out and we're watching these NBA players in their games, we watch their every move. We go back. We go back to how many years you're in the league and talk about all the teams that you have played for. One of the things that we do is, as soon as you get traded, we'll call that team and be like, hey, tell me about such and such, because we're all friends.
Right.
And we share information like that. So tell me about such and such player, and you get a really good picture of who that player is. We go back to college. We probably have information on them in their college days. So if you're in the NBA, you've got talent. The thing that separates us players from one to another is like your work ethic. Can you be a team player? You know, are you willing to be coached? Can you take instructions from the huddle and then go about doing those actions on the floor? So there's so many different things that we look at. And like I said before, like you got to be talented and you got to know, you got to have something that helps us. So you mentioned those three players. With a player like Giannis and Dame and Chris, like you got to be able to shoot the ball. Because if you don't shoot the ball and you're playing, teams are going to sag off, clog up the middle. Giannis can't be Giannis, right? Vellon, long, length, good point of attack defender. That helps Dame. Because now Dame doesn't have to worry about guarding the best guard offensively. We've got someone else that can do that. We've got someone that can guard the bigger guards. And so all the things that we've done, a Torian, versatile, can play the three, can play some small ball four, can defend, can pass, can dribble, can shoot, does a little bit of everything. And so when we make those type of decisions, first of all, we look at what's our need? How can they help us get better? We're in a position right now where we've got two top 75 players in their primes. We're in a position where we can be knocking on the door to win the championship while those guys are in their primes. And so we have to bring in players to help enhance what we have, improve what we have, and allow those players to be their best selves. And I think we did that this summer, and if we continue to do that while we have this, you know, this time with those players where we can win a championship, then, you know, we're doing our jobs.
Analytics, how does that factor into it?
Well, I tell you what, initially I was hesitant to not only include analytics, but to really see the value. Now, I can't tell you, you know this, like our basketball department is analytically driven.
Yes.
But at the same time, I say sometimes me being a basketball guy, I'm the one that puts the sense and replace the nonsense. because like, you know, analytics helps you get down into the weeds. And if you have a really good department like we do, I see the value in analytics. I have learned a lot being on this staff, being around those guys. But then sometimes when it's mano a mano, I know what you got in here because I've seen you time and time again rise to the occasion, or I've seen you time and time again shrink from the occasion.
Yeah.
And sometimes the numbers don't show that. But my thought process and my mind right now when it comes to analytics is it is a piece of the puzzle. Just like we can't make decisions just based on gut and, you know, like basketball, the eye test, it's part of the piece of the puzzle. And I think where everything fits together, you can make the best decisions.
Yeah.
And so I'm all for analytics. I continue to learn every day, and what our guys bring to the table is very valuable.
Yeah, yeah. A great coach at Crenshaw, Coach Ellison Chris, used to say, you know, Coach Al used to say, it's not the dog in the fight, it's the fight in the dog.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Man, we got dogs. We got dogs, Jimmy.
And that kind of brings me to a question, Milt, where I'm just kind of wondering, in today's NBA, like, is like being a dog, is that like a high value skill set that you look for in players? Is that a separator in when you're determining whether or not to either sign, trade for, or draft a guy, the dog in them.
Yo, that still has a place in the NBA, because when you're in the playoffs, and let's just take, for instance, you're going up against a Jimmy Butler. Mm. Like, I need somebody with the same tenacity, the same ferociousness. I need someone that's not going to back down, or players like him to be a competitor. And, you know, I won't even say dog, but to be like that ultimate competitor. Kobe was a dog. Michael was a dog. Anytime you have a player that has some talent and that's their mindset, that they refuse to lose, how can you not have a guy like that on your team? And sometimes the guys that have that mentality who aren't as talented as the other guy, but the other guy doesn't have that mentality, usually is the dog that wins out, because they will themselves to win the one-on-one battles. They're the ones that's going to dive on the floor and get that loose ball that might be the possession that helps you win the game. They're the ones that's going to see the seven-footer under the basket, and he's all of 6'2", and he's going to get there and get into those knees and box out. Like, you know, all that goes into the winning mentality of a guy that will refuse to lose. Very important.
Yeah, speaking of which, I mean, this is the one-year anniversary.
Portland is sending Damian Lillard to the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis and Dame, that is a scary thought.
I have a story that the great Adrian Wojnarowski, who is now the general manager. I saw he was hired as a general manager. I'm thinking it's going to be the Pistons or some pro team. It's actually his alma mater, St. Bonaventure. And they, with the NIL money, they need somebody to kind of handle their salary cap too. But Woj broke the story. Dame traded to the Bucks. And Dame, I've watched him closely in his career. He's got a lot of that dog in him. He didn't have the kind of year. And I say that, and we worked up some numbers, Milt. At his age, I think he's one of 10 or 12 players or something to average the amount of points and assists that he's averaged in the history of the NBA.
Ever.
So he still he had a great year, you know, overall. But in terms of Dame, but just talk about what went into that acquisition. And people like to say, well, no, Drew, that hurt you guys. And I like to tell them, well, Drew – If you have the luxury of having Drew as a fifth option, as the Celtics did, Drew's a different player. When he's a second option, now, you know, things get a little janky sometimes. But just talk about what led up to that and your input in the whole Dame acquisition from last year.
Well, I tell you what. Well, first of all, like, you're going to see an entirely different Dame this season. Last year, we got him a day or two before the start of training camp. And if you remember, he did not compete that entire summer because he didn't know where he was going to be, didn't want to get injured. And so he was waiting. So we got a Dame that was not in shape, hadn't played basketball, thrown into a new environment. Our team was put together with Drew in mind.
Yes.
And so when we made the change, now we had pieces that fit, but not collectively for the team that we now had. And so when we had the opportunity to get Dame, had conversations with Aaron Goodwin, his agent, and everyone knows that they thought Dame was going to go to Miami. You know, for whatever reason, that didn't happen. And Aaron says, hey, look, Dame wants to win. He wants to play with Giannis. You know, would you guys have interest? Well, of course we would have interest. So we go about having a conversation with Portland. And then when they told us what it would take to make it happen, first of all, we're saying, wow, you know, like, that's a lot. But we are getting a top 75 player in the history of the game. We didn't get to the playoffs. We didn't advance in the playoffs the last couple of years. And for whatever reason, maybe we couldn't score the ball in crunch time.
Sure.
Because as you know, in the playoffs, it's a physical game. And I always believe defense wins championships, but you also got to know how to score the ball. And so we made a collective decision that we want Dame can help us get over the hump, especially like when we get to the playoffs. If you can't stop somebody, you're not going to win. He is a proven player that he's pretty much unstoppable.
Yeah.
This year against the Pacers on a bad wheel, he showed that he's unstoppable. Now imagine if he's healthy. In that trade, we had to part ways with Drew, which was like one of the hardest things that I know that I had to be a part of. I know it was a very hard thing for John, but we felt like we had to make that move to add the piece that we thought were missing the last 2 years in the playoffs. Did it hurt us defensively? Yes. But you also got to understand the healthy Dame, we didn't have Giannis, and a healthy Giannis and a healthy Chris in the playoffs. We haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And I believe that when that happens, we'll be an unbeatable team.
Yeah.
We'll be an unbeatable team. But it was a tough decision. It was a lot that we had to give up, just like there was a lot we had to give up to Drew in terms of picks and trades and things like that. And for us, we had to give up Grayson, who was also another defender. It was something that had to be done, but I believe in the long run, we're going to be better for it.
I agree. And if you're going to get outscored, Jimmy Butler averaged 38 points a game for us against us in that playoff series against Miami a couple of years ago. And it's not a knock on Drew and his defense, but if Jimmy's giving you 38, you need somebody out there that's going.
We need 35.
We got to offset that a little bit. And the other point was that I read where Chris and Giannis, either the last two playoff years, have only played like three playoff games together, you know, and I didn't realize that we hadn't had the benefit of having both those guys. So it's tough to win like that. So health is the number one thing.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production.
Before we let you go, Milt, let's talk about the artist side of Milt, dude. And if people hadn't noticed, Milt's got the little black fingernail polish on the fingernail. he's got the little stud. I'm trying to get my hole open back up again, but it's just too painful to get that stud in there. But if I see you lug your camera around a lot of times on road trips, and then you've had art exhibits. Talk about the photography and kind of that passion in your life.
Yeah, you hit it right on the head. You know, it is a passion of mine. And it actually started in 2009. My mom bought me my first camera. And at first, I used it to make videos. And then I kind of morphed into photography, you know, taking pictures of my kids swimming and playing basketball and things like that. But, I think a lot of times when you watch, if 100 people watch a piece of art or a photo, you may get 100 different reactions. And so photography is a way for me to express myself, you know, what I see, how I view things. And so it's something that I take a lot of joy in doing, you know, just trying to get better. I love taking photos and, you know, using my camera to express myself, and it's something that, you know, when you're in the business we're in and everything is so high pressures and hectic all the time, it allows me to relax a little bit and kind of like, you know, like share a little bit of me, the other side of me with people through my work.
How much of it is spontaneous and how much of it is pre-planned in terms of the photos that you take?
You know what? I want to say more than half is spontaneous because, you know, like my wife, she thinks I'm crazy. My friends think I'm crazy. I might be walking down the street and go, oh, man, that's a great photo right there. And you're looking at like, what is like that right there?
Yeah.
And so that's the spontaneous part of it. And then the other part of it that's planned is, as you know, like you mentioned, I'll take my camera around. I'm completing a coffee table book of all the NBA arenas. And so that's the thing that I said one day, a year and a half ago, we go to all these arenas. I'm going to go and I'm going to take the facade of every arena and putting something together, the history of the arena, the score of when we played the game. And I've spoken to quite a few people. They said that they would love to see something like that. But that's just me just like expressing myself. And, you know, I really enjoy it.
Now, you mentioned your kids. You got a son that's a pretty good ball player in his own right.
Yeah.
In Minnesota, I believe.
Yes, in Minnesota.
And you shared a story about, was it the state championship game, I believe?
Yeah.
Tell us his name, kind of what's going on with him, and please share that story, and then we'll let you go after that. But I gotta get this one in, Chris. You love this one. Go ahead.
Yeah. So my son's name is Miles Newton, and he's a senior now at the Breck School in Minnesota. They won the state championship last year. First time in school history. Now, the school he goes to is a private school. They're more known for hockey. And my son was a swimmer up until age 14. So he was swimming because my daughter swam. She swims at Lafayette College in Pennsylvania. And so his mom and I, we kept him away from like honing in only on basketball because like we didn't want him to get burnt out, but we wanted him to like play all the other sports. So he swam, he played baseball, he played football, he did soccer. And he said when he was 12, like, Dad, I want to quit swimming, concentrate on basketball. And I said, no, you're not going to quit. I said, but when you turn 14, if you want to quit, then that'll be your decision. Turn 14, he goes, Dad, I'm out. So he's playing basketball. I can honestly say that my son, he's more talented than I was. He can handle, he can really shoot the ball, has a like high basketball IQ, really good passer. Me, I was just a runner, jumper, dunker until I got to college and learned how to really play the game. So his ninth grade year, he's on a team. I don't think he started as a ninth grader. He started as a 10th grader, 11th grader. He was captain. He's going to start, obviously, this year. He's a team captain. And so they're playing for the state championship. And I go to Minnesota to watch the game, and in the first game, he's out there, and he's kind of like, I don't know if he was shell-shocked because they're playing at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, Williams Arena.
At the barn, okay. And the place is packed. And he didn't look like the kid I've been watching all year. So his mom's in the crowd, and she's like, what is wrong with him? I said, I don't know, but this is embarrassing. So halftime comes around, and I'm not that parent, but I was like, nah, like that's my name on the back of his shirt. So I go down on the floor and I said, hey Miles, come here. So he comes over and I whisper in his ear, and then I gave him a kiss on the forehead. I told him, I said, look. You act like you're going to be here next year. I said, this is not a given. Like, this team has never won a championship in its entire existence. Now, you guys are in a position to win one. I said, you better stop playing like a B. Go out there and compete.
Yeah.
And then I gave him a kiss on his forehead. Mm. And then my boy went out in the second half and dropped 16.
Wow.
Yes,
wow.
Sir.
Did they win the game? Win the state championship?
They won the game. That was the quarterfinals. They played the semifinals. They won the finals. And the other parents are like, after the game, like, what did you say to him? I said, just a little gentle motivation.
Right.
That's all.
Right. Yeah, man.
Just a little gentle motivation.
Yeah.
And sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris, you know, as fathers, you know, Chris's son, Will, I mean, we all went through it. You know, kind of your son's makeup better than anybody. And sometimes it just takes a little gentle prodding to help them get to that next level. So that's a great story, man. Well, look, man, I've really enjoyed getting to know you these past few years on so many different levels. And you do a tremendous job, as everybody does in that front office. And we thank you for coming by the Here District, man. Spend a little time sharing some of your stories, and what a storied basketball history. And man, it's been tremendous. So Milton Newton, I'll see you soon. I'll see you.
Hey, Marcus, in training camp.
Yeah.
I got to say, man, like when I got here, and I found out that you're a part of the organization, I was like, damn, Marcus, because like I didn't like you when you were with the Bucks, because Dr. J was my guy.
Okay.
You used to drop numbers on my guy.
Yeah.
But then one of my favorite movies. I'm gonna go to my car, I'm gonna get my gun, I'm gonna come back and shoot everybody.
Oh yeah. But also Chris had a story too that he shared. Chris, share that with us, man, before we get out of here.
Yeah, so it's the capper, Milt. I don't know if you remember this, but you're working in the Washington Wizards front office. I was working for a technology company. We made some iPad apps, some solutions we were trying to sell to you guys.
Yeah.
I got on a call with Tommy Lloyd. You remember that era? Tommy Lloyd was out there, I believe. I believe it was Ernie Grunfeld.
Tommy Shepard. Yeah, Tommy Shepard.
So I was on with Tommy, right? And then I have my it's a webinar. We're showing the product off. I have my boss. This is like literally one of my first acts since joining the company. I got the Wizards on, so it's a big deal.
Yeah.
My boss is on the webinar, the whole company's on. Then all of a sudden, like before the webinar starts, you came on the call and like just shouted me out, said what's up to my dad, tell your dad I said hello. I wanted to say thank you for that. You have no idea like how much that meant to me at that time, my man. I mean, you showed me so much love, bro. And I just wanted to say thank you for that, because you just like, you took me off. I stayed with the company for like 7 years after that, man. Because you showed me love on the call, bro. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Wow. I appreciate you.
Trying to break the ice, man. Trying to break the ice.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah. We appreciate you, man. You've been nothing but gracious with me also, man. Milt Newton, we thank you, man. Assistant general manager for the Milwaukee Bucks, photographer extraordinaire, Renaissance man, black fingernails, the whole triple stud in the ear. Got it all cracking, man. We appreciate you coming by here, District, man.
Right.
Thank you so much,
Thank
man.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. See you soon.
All right. Take care.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.